Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet, is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion invites you to sign up for their breeder support program by clicking the link on our partner page at puredogtalk.com. Here, breeders can access immediate transitional insurance coverage for new litters going home, puppy kits, one-on-one support, and a whole lot more, all at no cost to you. Sign up on our partner page today and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are live in New York City at the Big Apple at Westminster Kennel Club Week, and I have a very special guest today. Pam Bruce is joining us from Canada.
Yes, thank you.
I think that people need to know a little bit more about your history, so
okay.
I'm glad you've joined us.
One thing from being sick that I always say, dog shows are not curing cancer or solving world peace.
No.
And people are always shocked when they come in the ring, in my ring as I'm judging, because they can't believe, first of all, my mouth, I've got to be so careful. But secondly, they're like, I can't believe it, you're so nice. And it's like, excuse me? And they said, oh, we're so nervous walking in because you look so stern. And I have, I guess, if I'm allowed to
You're
say
allowed
or
to
not,
say resting bitch face. We all know it. We all know it. So. Oh, my God. But, you know, resting bitch face has its moments. You're in the police world,
yes.
So you have to use that sometimes. So
yes.
There you go.
Yeah, my background in policing, I started out in the 80s. That was actually a funny story. I was doing a lot of modeling and working for a law firm. I had full intentions of being a lawyer, a criminal lawyer. And there was a recession in Canada at the time as well. I couldn't decide between being a lawyer or a vet, actually, and I had the marks for it. And then there was an issue with both programs trying to complete them in university at the time. And I was coming out of a modeling shoot, and I had hated the day. And there was a sign up above just where I was going to go, and it was in Toronto, and it said, "We want you," and it was Toronto Police. And I looked down, and it was our police facility at the time, and I walked in to speak to them about it, and I came out filling out an application to go into policing. And I thought, what am I doing? This is insane. So,
and this had to be a point at which there weren't a lot of women in policing.
Quite interesting story, and this is the absolute truth. When I came on, there was a horse assigned to every platoon, and because we have a large mounted unit in Toronto, and a woman. And the women were assigned to do strip searches and on sex trade workers mostly, but strip searches and to be able to investigate sex assaults and child abuse. So you learned really quickly, not dissimilar to dogs actually, you learned really quickly to either succeed and be the best you could be or you were going to be left behind. So we were assigned one woman a platoon. And there was five platoons and four other women in our station. And we were actually given the janitor's closet to change in at the start.
Wow.
And I refused that. I went into the handicap stall and with some dignity, I thought, in my uniform. I only spent a year in uniform. I really was fascinated with not only offenders, but particularly sex offenders and dangerous offenders actually became my specialty. So going back to school at the same time and being able to go forward. So I specialized for people that I guess, and for you especially too, as I'm talking to you, don't know, but my specialty was DNA. So I worked for sex crimes unit investigating major cases, being the officer in charge of major cases. Sex crimes unit in Toronto is an elite squad part, not dissimilar, I guess, but I've never watched them to the police shows.
Right.
Before I was sick, people always said that I reminded them of Mariska Hargitay.
Right.
Which is interesting because I don't watch them because it's too frustrating, those hour long shows, how they they solve everything, right?
That it took you a year to solve.
Yeah. But my specialty from being back in school was DNA. So I would write DNA warrants for sex crimes and homicide. Mm-hmm. So that's how I became interested in the dangerous offenders, because going into the facilities to be able to speak to a dangerous offender, to be able to get his DNA. Mm-hmm. What happens with the legislation in Canada was when DNA first came out, it was 2000 when our data bank was established, but when DNA first came out, what they would do, unless you committed two separate murders at two separate locations, the courts were not allowed to obtain your DNA, because it's a genetic blueprint, but it's also essentially the most intrusive thing you can do to someone, is to obtain their DNA.
Fascinating.
So what they ended up doing was, and I think Michael told you that as well, I just thought it popped into my head, about cloning, like we have Trist clone.
Right, right.
So something similar to that, what we did with humans was, it's the same Q-tip process where they swab the mm-hmm. insides of your cheeks. So when I would go in to deal with a dangerous offender, we wouldn't be bleeding them. So there's two ways of obtaining DNA. One is through bloodletting, and it's a sterile lancet that they put in your thumb, just like a diabetic test, mm-hmm. and it would go onto litmus paper, and it would dry and would send it into the data bank. The other way we ended up doing it far more successfully was a Q-tip, essentially inside a long plastic tube with a hole in the end for drying. And so I would much more be prepared to walk into a dangerous offender with a Q-tip as opposed to a sharp object.
Right.
So going in dealing with them, I found really interesting too. And that's actually how I learned to interview, was because I was always cognizant going in with a dangerous offender. I only ever swabbed two women dangerous offenders. They're all male. So you would be in a room with a dangerous offender knowing that they had done homicides or horrific aggravated sex assaults, leaving women for dead or whatever. And you were going in on your own with them. And it was fascinating watching them, because not only were you a woman, that they were very, very comfortable being able to try to take on physically, but they were really interested in taking you on mentally. Mm-hmm. So they would challenge you at every step. And resting bitch face, again, helped a lot in that. But I learned really quickly with them that if you were civil to them and treated them well, and with a bit of humor at times, they would reciprocate. They also found great humor in knowing when I would come in to take their DNA, they knew the DNA source that we had obtained through forensic evidence was often semen. So I cannot tell you the number of times I was offered semen instead.
It just went right there.
The rules of the room were set up extremely quickly that no, there was nothing happening except for a swab in their cheek. And I learned as well that they did the swab, because putting a swab to a man's mouth, you can just go there.
Yes. Leaving that entirely alone.
So it was clear instructions given to them about the same way that you'd brush your teeth, everything of the potential sexual component taken away. So learning the DNA and specializing in that, going from there, working with Center of Forensic Science and going in and seeing the crime scenes. And it was such an invaluable learning tool, seeing the crime scene from the beginning, where if I would be the one to interview the complainant. So in Canada, we call a victim of a sex assault a complainant until a conviction. So interviewing the complainant of a sex assault, then understanding as an investigator the crime scene and what my uniform officers would have gleaned with the forensic ID officers to be able to obtain evidence, and then ensuring that evidence was properly submitted to Center of Forensic Science, then going from there, working with the biologists at Center of Forensic Science on the profile we obtained, and then going from there, seeing down the line what it was, if it matched the offender I believed, if it didn't, the investigative process we would use going forward, and then taking that once we found the offender in taking that case through the courts. Mm-hmm. And that's where I touched on, again, with Dick Mean, how my life crossed over so many times between dogs and policing. And Dick was an expert, obviously, dealing with young offenders. Mm-hmm. So he would testify essentially against our case, and he was phenomenal at it, to sit and listen to him, but be able to explain to the courts, oftentimes the dangerous offenders are victims themselves.
Right.
And if not victims, but to understand their mindset. So I think it's helped me in all aspects of life, being able to understand the other person's mindset. Right.
Wow.
So just kind of a full circle moment when you look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details.
Well, and I think that one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you actually was because of this. And I think, well, simply because we get so wrapped up in talking about dogs, we forget that we're people too.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have outside interests and outside lives. And that there are fascinating people in dogs.
Right.
Who have cool day jobs.
Right.
And I think that bringing that to the listeners, bringing that so that, I say this all the time, I do judges panels and,
right.
and moderate things mm-hmm. at the dog shows. And I try to explain to the people at the dog show that have just been whining and kvetching and moaning because their dog didn't win and the judge is crooked and whatever. Judges were not hatched from an egg.
Right.
And this type of stuff is so valuable.
Do you know though something interesting that you said that makes me crazy in social media is when people say that dog shows are fixed and that it's rigged. I have got to tell you, and maybe, and I don't think I'm an anomaly, it's just quite interesting to see, is I have never once enabled anyone to speak badly to me about someone or some dog. And I think it's an interesting fact that you say about what people bring to the table. You don't know the person's background and you don't know who's in front of you. And I find that really tragic that people don't know who they're showing to, not from even the aspect of what they did for a living and what their life skill is, but what their background in dogs right. is. Right. And I remember having somebody in Orlando when I was judging Afghans walk up and say, well, what would an Airedale person know about hounds anyway? And I thought, okay, I can forgive somebody for not being around, but on a show like that, if you're prepared to put your money out and ask for my opinion of a dog on a day, you may want to know what my background is.
I love that CKC, the Canadian Kennel Club, does a much better job, I think, with doing bios.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Because that's, I look up bios all the time, clearly, because I'm doing the podcast right. interviews. And I love CKC's system,
right.
where they have just a little bit about everybody. And we don't have that necessarily in AKC.
Right. And so the Canadian Dog Judges Institute does that. And what I think, and that was just going to be my point. So as usual, you and I are very much on the same wavelength, is I put my bio, a brief bio, on InfoDog. Yeah. And I think it's such a detriment when I go on InfoDog for a judge that I don't know, and there's nothing there.
Right.
Right. And it may not make the final decision for you whether you enter or not. But as a judge, I have never purposely denied a dog because of who's at the end of the leash.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. And on the flip side of that, I have awarded many people who, I'm trying to say it nicely, I may not have the greatest respect for in the world as human beings, but have had the best dog. And there was somebody a long time ago that said to me, as a new judge, it must have killed you to award my dog. And I said, make no mistake, I awarded the dog, not you. And I walked away. And I thought, you know, that's where I think we fall down. And it's just interesting, too, on who's around you. One of my favorite people down here, Dr. Fred Askin with the beautiful Westies. The one day I'd had heart surgery after my cancer bout, and he saw me going to my heart a few times and just putting my hand over my chest. And maybe some people will argue I don't have a heart, but I actually have documents that would prove that. But Dr. Askin was so funny because I thought, how appropriate. He was my ring steward for Orlando for Afghans. And he said to me, I got you, girl. And I started laughing, and I said to him, in more ways than one. And he and I knew exactly what that meant. And there's not a day that goes by when I don't see him at a dog show that he doesn't ask how I'm feeling. But more importantly, he's always so supportive of the dogs and vice versa. And I think that's what our sport should be about, is supporting each other.
And I think in so many ways it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
It really is. And I coined a phrase, basically, many years ago when Don Rogers had his big truck accident. And everybody all, you know, we were looking for the dogs and I was driving across country and Don was who raised me
as a
person. And to be so far away and not be able to help and all the people who were. And I called it the tribe. And
it's so true.
That is to me to this day. And I understand for a lot of people coming into the sport that don't yet feel part of the tribe. Mm-hmm. I think that is some of the conflict.
The pushback.
Right? The conflict for new people coming into the sport, because those of us who are in the sport for a while are tribal. Like,
we
literally
are
tribal. And we need to be better about bringing new people into the tribe and not being cannibals.
I agree with you to a point. What I want to throw back at you is the idea of how do you become a tribe member? And I posted something not that long ago on Facebook about those people are my tribe, right? But I also think that friends are the family you choose.
Yes.
And you choose for yourself, and I think you choose well. And the one thing that I've realized as I've gotten older, especially, and especially from having cancer and being told, it's 10 years ago in April, I was given 3 weeks to live and told to get my affairs in order. And I thought, I have too many things to do yet. I'm not ready. And the one thing that I really learned, I've never suffered fools gladly, let me be clear. But
no, really? Shocked.
But
shocked.
I find the people that I adore are my tribe. I would go to the ends of the earth for them, but they would go to the ends of the earth for me. What I find interesting, in a handler in Canada last year at one of our bigger shows that Mike and Rose Sharman run, Caledon Kennel Club, he's a handler, but he specializes in terriers, and he said to me that he was not shocked, but it was something similar to that, on how I was speaking to a young family who just before my Airedale was, my Airedale specials bitch was getting ready for the group, and I had a very competitive group that day, and I had a very very decent shot in placing in that group. And he said he was shocked watching me because he said this young family came up and they were mauling the dog and they were carrying on. And he said, I was so patient with them. And he said, he timed me listening to me speak to them. And he said, you never lost interest in them. He said, you were so responsible knowing what they needed going forward. Now, what I wanted to put to you with that is this, is when we were new, what did we do? First of all, we had the luxury because we were kids, and that's fine. There's a young junior handler I watched recently in Philadelphia by the name of Brady, and he reminded me of myself as I was younger, but he was watching Jamie Clute. And I was standing there watching them. We were all in the same area, and I was not shocked, but so pleasantly surprised to watch. Not only was he watching the way Jamie was putting the dog on the table and going through him, and you think about teamwork, how well he works with that border collie.
Yeah.
But I watched that boy. He wanted to dress like Jamie. He wanted to help Jamie. He was taking a towel to ringside. And that's where I think we've lost the ideal or going forward on what that tribe is. Because any tribe, whether it's culturally, whether it's, we'll use the dog show analogy, you had to earn your way to there. So people that are new, that are disgruntled, because face it, a lot of people that are younger want instant success in anything, right?
Well, and I think that's a generational thing.
That's my point.
I mean, you and I are of a generation.
That's my point.
Right? And I think it's a generational thing, and I think you're absolutely right. It's a push and pull.
Right.
Right? Like, we have to be welcoming, but I wanted to even put a bracket around something you said earlier. I was given the opportunity to pick up dog poop. Trust me, I've raised up a lot of juniors. None of them thought of it as an opportunity.
But if you don't start...
Exactly.
And be able to allow somebody the idea that you... Well, first of all, I was too young, I think, at that point to have an ego. But the fact being is, if you think you're above that, then you're in big trouble. Because if you're walking your own dog, Who cleans up after your dog, right? It's no different that way. And it's something actually that just bounced into my head that you said to me, and I wanted to address that. I've actually had judges, and there's very few things I take offense to. I take such offense to this. I have had judges more recently than ever before say to other people, well, she is well connected or well appointed. And I have news for you. I grew up with these people who were people. Mm-hmm. Who became my tribe, that's fine, but they were people,
right?
And so whether it's Dennis Sprung, right. whether it's Michael, right. whether it's Peter Green, whether it's Dick and John, whoever it is that people deem icons in our sport, mm-hmm. they were people. You go back 40 years, right. they were the hardest working, most dedicated, driven people with talent that I have seen. We have handlers that are just as driven and talented right now that will be people or are becoming people. Right. And it's not dissimilar to the junior handlers. Going back to the other point that you said, which is, I think is of such value, is the fact that these people that you're allowing into your tribe, how many of them come up and are interested in any breed but their own? How many do you see sitting ringside morning till night, watching Mr. Bivin, watching Mr. Reynolds, watching Virginia Line?
Can I just have a moment of bowing to Jenny Line?
Right.
Can I show you the picture of my very first show dog that I ever had that was incredibly ugly? And I, in my little ruffled plaid blouse, and Jenny Line awarding her points. I'm just saying.
And it's something that you never, ever get over. I mean, Ginny is my bigger sister. The biggest...
It's the bowing. Compliment. I just love her.
Well, exactly. And they're true icons. Yes. And the biggest compliment that I have been given, and I'm going to try to say it without tears, and I think I can, but that I'm a younger version of her. And that, to me, is mind-boggling, because there is one Ginny, there is one John, there is one Mr. Bivin, and the three icons, ladies we've talked about earlier. But with Ginny, when you see not only the human compassion, the talent as a breeder, yeah. the drive, the dedication, but the fairness, and how incredibly she has such foresight in any breed, and she... When you know her well and you speak to her often, we will discuss dogs, and it's one of my favorite things to do to this day, is we will discuss dogs that aren't our breed, and we'll say, okay, the intrinsic quality of the dog is this. And Ginny's the one that taught me to take the written standards with me, the book, and I would put it in the front seat of my car coming up as a judge. And if there was something in a dog that I didn't understand, I wouldn't stand there in front of people and look it up on my phone. I would go back to the car and sit in quiet and read it and understand it and digest it. And if I still didn't understand it, Ginny was available to explain it, right? And it's so funny when we're talking about her. There's two times I go to Macy's. And one is for Montgomery weekend. There's a Macy's in Philadelphia, and one is the Garden. And I took her shopping with me in Macy's the other day. So total tears, because this is the first time she's not here with me. But what I did was I took her shopping for, and you talk about combining everything as it ends, but yet another black crepe dress that I didn't need. Thank you, Michelle Billings. But I couldn't decide. And I've got the pictures on my phone. And I was sending Ginny the pictures and the video. And she's going, dear God, what's this on this dress? And, oh, will that one be itchy? And I said to her, thank God I'm not going to take you in the dressing room with me. But I found this amazing sequin frock. And I had it on. And 5 seconds later, I was screaming and ripping it off because it was so itchy. So back to the black crepe I go. But I went all out and found a black crepe that was embellished. And my other black crepe dress, because I now have 5 in my closet, I left at Macy's. But being plus size now, I asked the girl who has been so good to Ginny and I at Macy's. Her name is Jennifer, and she actually just lost her golden. Okay. And I've known her for as long as we've come to New York. And she's worked there, She said, I think 30 years. Anyway, she said to me, you really need this dress. And I said, you're right. And she said, where's that lovely Virginia that was here? And even she remembered Ginny. And that was so amazing to see. And so I said to Ginny, I'm so proud of myself. I walked out of the store and didn't buy the dress. And she said, oh, girl, go back and get it. So I walked in the next day and the sales rep was there and she said, I put it away for you. It's here.
Aww.
So... And yesterday was my birthday, so I went
and bought... Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so I went and bought two pairs of shoes to celebrate as well. So I had to
my send... My kind of girl right there. You got my shoes to celebrate.
Exactly. So I had to send Jenny pictures of those, but perfect. We miss her and we love her. And
we do.
Yeah.
Very sad. All right. Well, listen, we have had a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much.
And thank you. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your time. And listeners, I really hope that you will take all of this to heart and join our tribe.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Two Cities Kennel Club and the surrounding community were dramatically impacted by the devastating campfire last fall. The club will hold a two-day raffle at its show to raise funds for a new Yuba County AKC Reunite disaster trailer. Each AKC Pet Disaster Relief Trailer is stocked with essential, non-perishable supplies needed to set up and provide safe sheltering options for pets during an evacuation. The tragedy of last year's fires reinforced the need for a trailer in Northern California. To donate items to the raffle or to donate directly to this critically important disaster relief trailer, go to the events section of the Pure Dog Talk Facebook page for contact information. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.